Welcome back to Beyond the Threshold into Other Realms. And right now we have the better looking part of a tag team research group, who is Karen Dolan. None other, I should say, than Karen Dolan. And she is the host of Through the Keyhole, which is on ParanormalRadioNetwork.com. Karen, how are you doing today?
Great, guys. Thank you so much for asking me to join you.
Our good friend does a lot of research in the paranormal besides the ufological. And what's the topic you're going to talk about today?
Well, I've been giving a new presentation lately at several different conferences, UFO conferences, and also for local ghost hunting groups here, and a psychic fair. And it's a comparison of UFO research and paranormal research. They're very much alike in a lot of ways, and there are other ways in which they're strikingly different.
And on the similarity side, what would you say is the most significant?
Well, the most obvious is they're both this huge mystery. You know, it's a phenomenon that we don't understand that appears to have intelligent control. This isn't just random activity. If you have a poltergeist case or a haunting or a UFO alien contact case, this appears to be some sort of a situation where people are in touch with some being that we don't know very much about. They can do things we can't do. They have motivations that we can't understand frequently. Sometimes they'll try to communicate their motivations to us, but we don't always know if they're telling the truth. You know, there's this huge mystery, and I think it's the mystery itself that attracts most people to both fields of ufology and paranormal research.
I've actually come across the same thing myself, too, as far as a poltergeist and things like that. You can't really tell if it's actually an ET or a poltergeist or either or, because they both could act the same way.
Yeah, lights, mm-hmm. flashing lights, bright lights, they're both related. I mean, some people see a bright light in the bedroom. It could be a UFO with a light.
Yeah. Yes, the only variation, of course, is knowing if it's a polka geist.
A polka geist
will have an accordion playing, and there will be a lot of plump women dancing around on heels.
I haven't run across any of those yet.
Okay. Just keep your eyes peeled.
Now, I have
for
heard of cases of hauntings where people hear marching band music.
Really?
In fact, that was in the Amityville Horror case. That was one of the things that George and Kathy Lutz were in their bed at night, and they heard what sounded like an entire marching band playing in their living room.
That's different.
And they heard it in the living room for a while, and then it sounded like it was coming closer and coming up the stairs. And, you know, at that point, I just had to put the book down. I was like, okay, this is too weird.
That would completely
freak me out.
See, I've heard of marching before, but that's like in Gettysburg. You'll see troop marchings, but I've never heard of a marching band.
Now, speaking of the renowned case there, you know, the Lutz case, Amityville Horror, what's your take on it as far as do you walk away, first of all, of being genuine? What components do you feel are genuine?
It's very difficult for me to say which components are genuine and which are not. That's something I would really love to get into more deeply. I haven't had the opportunity yet. I have actually visited the house, but I've only seen it from the outside. I didn't get a chance to go in. But I live in New York State, and it's in New York State. So, yeah, I did get to stop over and see it when I was passing through once. And, you know, I didn't see anything. I didn't hear anything, which doesn't mean nothing happened. It meant the afternoon that I was there for an hour, I didn't see anything. I have to say, I know there's a huge controversy surrounding that case. I know that a lot of people say it was all a hoax, that the Lutzes did it to get attention, to sell their story. I'm a big fan of demonologist Ed Warren and his wife Lorraine, who is a psychic who worked with him until he died a few years ago. And they always said that that case was genuine. There really was something going on there. They said that the book was written up in such a way that it did distort some of the facts, and the movies that were made were based on the book, and they were distorted even further, so that what most people see as the account of what happened in that case isn't accurate. But that doesn't mean nothing really happened. And they said that the Lutzes were terrified when Ed and Lorraine Warren met George and Kathy Lutz, they said that the Lutzes absolutely flat out refused to go anywhere near the house. They said that when George Lutz found out they were planning to go to the house to investigate, he said, "Would you please bring me the deed?" Because he wouldn't go near it. He said he needed some valuables from the house, but there was no way he was going back there.
Well, for those people who don't know much about this renowned case, and it's probably just the younger people, can you give us a little backdrop as far as what went on and why it is considered haunted, some of the history?
Well, it's been a long time since I've read the book. I just recently saw one of the movies that was made on it, so I'm hoping I don't remember something wrong and put in something from the movie that didn't actually happen. But George and Kathy Lutz had, I believe, just one daughter when they moved into this house in Amityville, New York, which is on Long Island. And they were there for, I think, 28 days, just under a month, right? And it was in December, because it was around the Christmas season when they were in there. When they moved in, you know, apparently they heard voices telling them to get out. They had serious personality changes. George was cold all the time. Even though he was turning up the heat, he was constantly adding wood to the fireplace. Everyone else thought the house was sweltering, and he just could not get warm. Their daughter had an imaginary playmate she called Jody. And, you know, for a long time, the parents just thought, oh, this is this imaginary playmate. Okay, started when we moved into the new house, but no big deal. She's adjusting. But they would see things like a little rocking chair in the daughter's bedroom would be moving when no one was near it. Or they would often hear noises outside in their boathouse because they're right on the edge of the island. There was a boathouse attached at the back of the yard. They'd hear noises. George would have to keep going outside and check that. It was always nothing. One time when he had checked it, made sure it was secure, he turned around to come back to the house, and he looked up at his daughter's bedroom window, and he saw her in the window looking down and something else, another figure next to her, also looking down at him. And I know in one of the stories they said that figure had glowing red eyes. I don't know if that was true or if that was exaggerated for the story.
I say that's never a good
sign.
It sure
made a good scary story, though.
Yeah. Now, the history of the house itself, as far as reasons for, let's say, a haunting, was, of course, the murder case, or
right,
the murders.
Right, that was where Ronnie DeFeo murdered his entire family.
Yes.
And I don't believe he ever said that he didn't do it, but he did say he was compelled to do it by voices that he heard in the house.
Yes. And he also convicted his sister. The older sister, there was four kids, and he convicted or he was saying that the older sister, who he killed, was the one who killed the two younger children. And I guess now, in looking back on the case and going through the information and evidence, that may very well be the case. Have you seen the interview that he had done, a couple months back? Have you seen that?
Oh, I haven't seen a recent one, no.
It was very
I've seen some older ones, but I haven't seen anything lately.
And very interesting, because he definitely, you know, said, like you say, he felt that he was possessed or hearing words, much like Son of Sam and many other mass murderers. One thing about them also is the criminal element in the family. Did you know much about, or did you read much about the background of the family itself?
No, I didn't. Sounds like there's some really interesting stuff here.
Yes. His father was, a wise guy or a hitman for the mob or some element.
Allegedly,
yes. And the son was involved in a few murders with him. And there's research into that going on, or investigations going into some of the allegations that he's made. So, kind of weird.
No.
But there's even more history to that. There's supposedly a Native American graveyard. And there's like
they're everywhere.
Yeah, the old Indian burial ground. But yeah, Jay Anson did imply in his book, The Amityville Horror, that it wasn't so much a burial ground as an area that the Native Americans considered to be cursed and wouldn't go to.
Nice. Demonic area.
Skinwalker Ranch, you know, the Skinwalker area out in Utah, that it's that area where they say there are evil spirits here and we won't go there. And if you white people want to build a house there, you know, hey, good luck.
Yeah. You got to be pretty brave.
I don't know. I've read several things that said, well, that wasn't, you know, he made that up for the book. But I don't know. It's difficult to say because this is such a celebrated case and so many people have weighed in with their opinions. And it's very difficult to tell who's actually checked facts and who is weighing in with their opinion.
True. And do you see that to be commonplace as far as in the paranormal field, more so or less than, say, for instance, in ufology?
Is what more commonplace?
That people seem to chime in more with their opinion instead of actually bringing evidence forward and hard documentation.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, and I think it happens probably equally in both fields, and I don't think a lot of people who do it are necessarily trying to mislead anyone. I think they honestly believe that they have accurate information, but if you actually examine where they got that, it's their opinion. They don't know for sure.
That's what I see, too.
Now, people will hear something that seems very unlikely and they'll say, oh, no, come on, that's not real.
Yeah, between paranormal and UFOs, I see the same thing. There's virtually no difference, because I've always been involved in paranormal, but now I'm more in UFOs, and they're identical.
Or it's difficult because of the internet, actually, which can be this amazing research tool, and it can be wonderful. I mean, we have our radio shows going out on the internet. We're reaching all these people because of the internet. We're able to email each other and do research. Well, that's great, but if one person puts out something as fact that they haven't checked, then how many people are going to repeat that and quote it as if it's fact because they read it in somebody's book or in somebody's article or blog or heard it on a radio show stated as fact?
Yeah, it could be.
And that's the problem. See, they might believe that it is fact. And if you go back to them, they'll say, well, yeah, absolutely, I checked that.
I always tell everybody to Google anything they see on the web. Just Google's your friend.
But so many sites, anybody can put stuff up there, and if you don't know whether the person who originally wrote it really did a thorough job of fact-checking, it's really hard to rely on those facts as accurate.
Now, of your cases that you've had a chance to really take a peek at, what would you say is your most celebrated paranormal case, haunting, whatever?
My most celebrated paranormal case. Wow. I actually don't do as much research as I would like. And a lot of my time is spent more on the UFO side because, you know, that's kind of how I got pulled into this field.
I wonder why.
Gee, I wonder why.
I can't imagine living in the Dolan household.
Well, we have some interesting dinner table conversations, I'll tell you.
How about it?
Growing up in a really...
Yes, your poor children.
They're getting really into it. Our daughter is very fascinated with cryptozoology. She is into the Loch Ness Monster and this sort of thing.
Oh, there you go. We have a second generation of investigative researchers
already
on board, and I'm excited about that. I have to meet them. I haven't yet to meet them, so... One of these days we had to do that.
Yes, you have to.
Jeez.
Unless they're imaginary children.
Oh, I've seen pictures and I've spoke to them.
They seem a little unreal some days, I'll tell you. No, it's funny because we used to worry that they'd never want to have their friends over to the house. And I think they were a little worried about that at first, too. But then after they did the first time, they'd have a friend over for dinner or for sleepover, and their friends would say later, wow, your house is so cool.
Yeah.
Like, yes, okay.
You're the cool parents. That's what every parent wants to be.
Well,
no kidding.
That in itself is an interesting topic. You know, here you have a family where everybody's pretty much involved to some degree, at least knowing or hearing or somehow interacting with this, where you're not separating the children, say, no, go in a different world.
Yeah.
What the hell am I talking about? Anyways, because we're talking about adult things, or we don't want them to hear this or startle them.
You know. Well, we did when they were smaller.
You did
when
initially?
When they were very young, we did that. Because, you know, when Rich wrote his first book on UFOs, That was when I was just starting to learn about the field at all. I didn't know anything about UFOs until he started writing his book.
Okay, give us some insight on that.
He had a house full of books he was using for research. That's the same time our kids were born. They were both born during the time his volume one of UFOs in the National Security State was being written.
Now,
so
for
a long time, yeah, we kept it very separate. I didn't want to talk about UFOs and especially alien abductions
right
in front of kids. They were having a hard enough time getting, you know, sleeping through the night as it was.
Now, on that note, let's say, for instance, when he came to you and he says, or you found out he was going to be doing this book, and what was your initial response?
Rich came to me one day and he kind of hung his head a little bit and he said, I, you know, I have to tell you something. And I'm thinking, oh God, what?
Yeah.
And he said, well, I'm really interested in UFOs and I'm kind of doing a research thing on it. And at this point, he wasn't even sure it was going to become a book.
So
it was
starting
to look like it would.
So he came
and
out of the ufological closet.
He was waiting
closet
for me to say, are you insane? Why would you do that? And I said, cool. Great.
Well,
and so I started reading the books he was reading, and I'd been interested in, like, reading ghost stories and things ever since I was a kid. I grew up with that. I've always been fascinated by it. The subject of UFOs just never came up for me until Rich presented it. So for me, it's like, okay, another cool thing that I don't know anything about. Let's find out.
Now, your background, as far as education and career and everything, is more so what?
Is more, well, checkered. I've been to college. I've never gotten a degree in anything. I've taken, like, classes here, classes there, keep changing my major. I majored in biology and veterinary medicine at a college in Buffalo here, and I really enjoyed that. And I left when we started a family, actually. I was in the middle of the program.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I'm kind of a science wonk. For a little while, I was an art major, and then I decided to switch over to science.
What sign are you?
So, I'm sorry?
What sign are you?
What sign am I?
Yeah,
I'm
when
a
were
Virgo.
You same thing. I mean, when's your birthday?
September 4th.
Mine's the 14th. I was like, this is sounding too familiar. It's like, wow. Yeah, and that's pretty much how I am. I like to know everything, and more experience is better. And
yeah,
something challenging is always that much more tempting.
Hey, Karen, I got a question for you. We're going back to the Amityville home.
Lorraine
Warren believes it's demons. I talked to her at the Chicago Ghost Conference, and I believe Lorraine, no doubt about it. But have you heard the alternate theory where some of these people say there aren't demons, they're just disturbed people? Have you ever, you familiar with that?
Not specifically. I mean, I hear people say that here and there all the time. Yeah, okay. They're saying demons don't exist. Personally, my theory is that if demons have not existed since the beginning of time as a separate order of creation, as they call them in the Bible, maybe they're actually something more like thought forms that have been created by the belief of millions of people over thousands of years.
Yeah.
You know, maybe all of these people who are handed a blueprint by the church, they say, here, demons are this and this and this and this. And all these people focus their belief and their fear on this very specific image that's handed to them. Wouldn't that create a thought form? It would create that thing, which would eventually take on its own consciousness, and it would be able to act under its own power. And they do. They become separate.
Yeah, I believe they're real. I don't understand where people come off with this. But, I mean, I if you believe in angels, you've got to believe in demons and heaven and
personally,
hell.
Personally, I think demons are real.
Well,
but I think maybe some of them have been created by the belief in the others.
Well, the best case I saw for that was actually from Lorraine, too.
Yeah.
I don't remember all the details. It was another country, and this guy was possessed and well-known. And you might know this case. And they went up there and... first thing is they got a flat tire on their truck when they showed up there, and the guy just lifted the truck up with his hand so they could change the tire.
Oh, my God.
And she filmed this, and his eyes are rolling back in his head. He's just a poor farmer that didn't speak very well. He was speaking fluid Latin backwards. It was an amazing case, and they got him fixed, so to speak, however you want to put it, and he missed all the attention and got repossessed again.
Wow.
Yeah, it. But he had incredible strength, which then again, that you know,
yeah.
that can't say that's mental illness then, because that's a that's an entity. Something's happening there.
Definitely. Well, right. When the person, I mean, mental illness generally means a person can't do all of the things they normally should be able to. Whereas in possession, you find people who can do quite a bit more than they could before. They can speak languages they've never studied. They can speak dead languages sometimes.
Uh-huh.
They have inhuman strength. Yeah. They can levitate. I think they can do all kinds of things that a normal person can't. I mean, being able to speak a dead language accurately and sometimes idiomatically, I think is not something that would be possible for someone with mental illness to be able to do. That doesn't seem like an indication of illness to
no,
me.
I don't. I'm on the side. I believe there's I believe there's demons because you like say if you're religious, mm-hmm. You got to. The Bible tells
yeah.
you there is, but you don't have to be religious either. There's some entity, but there's actually the paranormal community split in half on this. There's some people that swear there is no such thing as demons.
Well, you know what? There's a similar split going on in the UFO community, where there's a group of people who say that alien abductions are actually visitations by demons, and that you can stop alien abduction mid-tracks by calling on Jesus for help.
I've heard that, too, but I've actually heard that they say they are aliens, but for some reason, when you invoke Jesus' name, they take off, which I'd never quite followed.
That is creepy, because
if they're aliens, why would they care if you call on Jesus?
Right. But I've heard that numerous times.
The thing I really don't like about that, and, you know, maybe it works, and if it does work for some people, great. I would say anybody should try it because it might work. You never know. What makes me nervous is that the researchers who talk about this, who promote this, say this will work every single time. Yeah. But then there's this caveat that if you try it and it doesn't work, it's because you didn't ask hard enough. You didn't beg hard enough for Jesus to come help you. You don't have strong enough faith. And you know what? That's putting it right back on the victim.
Right.
That's exactly like blaming a rape victim.
If you got a demon or something.
Not okay.
I was going to say, if you got a demon or something out there.
I was on a panel in Roswell, New Mexico a few years ago where this question was brought up to the panel. And another panelist was researcher Farah Yurdozu,
uh-huh.
who is from Turkey, and she is Muslim. And she said, well, I wouldn't call on Jesus because I'm not Christian.
Right.
So what does that mean? What if I were being abducted? Does that mean it's okay if it happens to me because, you know, I'm out of luck because I wouldn't call on Jesus?
I wonder if you could call on Allah if you'd have the same response.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
she has a different attitude toward the whole thing. I mean, whenever she talks about alien abductions, she says they're not really abductions. They're more like visitations from the jinn. And, you know, they're much more open to the whole thing. And they see it as almost the same as we would talk about visits from your spirit guides.
Well, there's so many different views and sides you can take on this with UFOs
yeah.
and paranormal, you know, no one knows any of this. I mean, unless you die, you mm-hmm. don't know what's going on.
Well,
and that's why it's so compelling, you know, we don't know. And it's so difficult to find answers rather than all of us just giving up and throwing our hands in the air and saying, oh, forget it then. We just can't let it go. It makes us work even harder to try to find some answers.
I know I can. I've been obsessed with this stuff my entire life.
Yeah.
Well, you know, energy follows
thought.
Funny
thing about human nature. Wouldn't you think we'd all just say, oh, forget it.
Yeah.
You know, at some point, move on.
No, I wish I would. It cost me money to have this hobby. I got to pay for my website and all my stuff. It's not exactly cheap.
You know, Karen, energy follows.
That's another thing that a lot of skeptics don't yeah. realize. This is another pet peeve of mine. You know, when someone comes out and tells their story of alien abduction, for example, and skeptics will say, oh, he just made that up to sell his books.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? If somebody has an experience like that, if they're brave enough to come out and put their experience in writing and put it out where other people who might be going through the same thing can read it, and maybe get an idea and some insight into what is happening to them, and maybe get an idea of who they can talk to about it, because with the wonders of the internet now, if you read a book that interests you, you can find the author and you can get in touch with them. And I love that.
Let's actually...
I mean, when I was a kid, you couldn't do that. You could maybe write to the publisher, but
I gotta,
you know, and if these people can maybe get a little bit of money back to cover some expenses from the long-distance phone calls to researchers and maybe traveling to meet with researchers and maybe traveling to conferences in the hope of finding somebody who can help them figure out what's happening in their life. And then a lot of them are looking for a therapist, and a lot of therapists won't deal with this because they think it's crazy.
Of course. Yeah.
What's wrong with that picture?
Yeah. So that's initially why I started my...
They've all gone through so much already. And you know what? If they can get a couple of bucks back on their book, more power to them.
Yeah. You know, energy follows thought, Karen. And energy and matter are not separable. You can't, you know, matter is comprised of energy. And you're talking about, well, can we manifest stuff? Well, I think we can. It's a very interesting point. Now, are there other areas that are more conducive geologically, say, for instance, for phenomena to reveal itself, if it's a thinning of a dimension, or say, for instance, it's more attuned to magnifying or manifesting phenomena? And I know you had Chris O'Brien on your show not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And from what he had... told you, and you've heard many a time, I'm sure you've read some of his books, as I have, and they're fantastic books. What do you think as far as that Skinwalker and many other locations that seem to have some sort of presence in a specific location?
Well, I think, first of all, let me just say that I think Chris O'Brien is absolutely brilliant. And it's difficult sometimes to follow him because he just seems like he's leaps and bounds ahead of most people's thought processes. I was fortunate enough to hear his presentation at the Angel Fire Symposium last September, and I could see some people in the audience really trying to follow and not quite getting it, but I can understand it's like his mind moves so fast. Everything he said was brilliant. But it was hard to connect the dots sometimes because he bounces from one to the next because these things seem so obvious to him.
Right.
And if you're new to the field, they're not obvious.
No.
The man is absolutely brilliant, and I'd love to talk with him some more.
One thing I find very interesting is notion or take on, say, for instance, cattle mutilations. And can you address that?
Can I address cattle mutilations?
No, as far as his take on the cattle mutilations not being that of, say, for instance, or all the result of an extraterrestrial presence, but...
You know, he talked a lot, in the presentation that I heard especially, he was discussing the trickster.
Yes.
And which is exactly the kind of thing we're running up against, you know, where we have this being that has powers that we don't, and it essentially loves to mess with us. So it's not going to be consistent. So that, you know, we're out there trying to be all scientific and observe every detail about this situation and every detail about that case over there and then try to compare notes and see patterns. But it's tweaking us. It's playing with us. And it won't behave the same way twice. Hmm. And we're just going to have to deal with the fact that sometimes that's how life is. And, you know, maybe that's the lesson. Or maybe just getting us to ask the questions is the important thing.
What do they
maybe
think?
Maybe just opening up how we see the world. I do. Before we go too far, I just wanted to go back to that your question about different areas in the world being more conducive to this kind of activity.
Yes.
I think, as you mentioned, the Skinwalker Ranch area, that had a long tradition among the Native American people who lived in that area as, you know, there's something different. There's something special about that. And they avoided it because they felt that that was sort of like getting in the way of what might easily become an angry spirit, and I don't want to go there. And anytime you find a long-standing tradition like that among Native peoples, I'm going to pay attention because, you know, they don't just make this stuff up.
No.
And there's no reason to. I mean, everybody makes up stories to tell the kids by the fire, but not that kind of thing. You don't refuse to build a home in a certain area based on a story that you made up for the kids. You know, if you actually, if a whole culture avoids a certain geographic area, there's a reason for it. And,
yes.
You know, looking around the world, there are many, many places around the world where there are ancient stone structures. There's Stonehenge, there are stone circles, there are earth mounds, there's the Serpent Mound in Ohio here. Ancient cathedrals were, I mean, very old cathedrals were often built on the site of something older, and they were built there because there was something special about that location. So anytime you see that sort of thing, I would think that would be one of the places you're talking about where there's more likely to be supernatural activity or manifestation.
That's very interesting.
It can't happen anyplace else, but yeah, it's, you know, maybe you have a little more energy to work with in those places.
Much like you said about these religious locations, chapels, churches, cathedrals, temples, etc., being on places of prior significance, it's almost like this is the other aspect of some reasoning to religion, which is always, which may very well be part of, is that consciousness, that that mass consciousness from a culture actually cultivating that next phenomena that would be where they hang their belief, call it religion. And maybe that is also part of the transition of, say, for instance, it's not about the answer, it's the next set of questions that truly develop our intellect and really define us as sapient. So I agree with you on that 100%.
Yeah, and sometimes the buildings of a new religion were built on the sites of the old in order to establish the dominance of the new religion.
Yes.
Or sometimes just because they wanted to take advantage of the power that was in that spot. And they actually acknowledged the fact that, yeah, the previous religious leaders did find a good spot to put this place of worship.
Right.
Okay, totally fine. Also, because the common people were accustomed to coming to one particular place for their religious observance. So it's a lot easier to take over if you take that spot. You know, if you set up the new religion, the new church, in the same place where people are used to coming for their pagan festivals, they'll
right.
still come.
They'll still be there and just performing whatever they call it these days.
Right.
Now, these days in ufology, we're talking about more so the exopolitical. That's the next threshold, I think, where, you know, there are still many of us, the old timers, who are still nuts and bolts and still just trying to quantify the existence of something genuine. And we have Steve Bassett, Stephen Greer, and everybody else in this element of the exopolitical running around, already going beyond that. And where do you stand today on that?
I think, for me, the exopolitics idea is fascinating. I think it's amazing that somebody actually thought of this, to move beyond documenting the appearances of lights in the sky and how many witnesses have seen these. I mean, that's still vital because, amazingly, there are still people who don't believe in UFOs. There have been so many and so many sightings, so many well-documented sightings. Even my kids, my daughter when she was 7, turned to me and said, how could anybody not, why don't people admit that these are real? How could you not believe in this? It's right there. You know, if you can't fool a 7-year-old kid, come on, let's just move on, people. And for me, the exopolitics group has done that. They've kind of said, okay, guys, we know they're real. We know they're here. We know they exist. How are we going to deal with them? You know, let's look at the future. What are we going to do about this? I think that is a brilliant and really far-sighted way of looking at the world, and we need more big thinkers like that. The one problem that I see with this is that we can't really come up with a plan on how to deal with somebody when we have no control over our relationship with them. These other beings appear when and where they want to. They'll land if they want to. You know, why don't they appear on the White House lawn? Everybody says that. Why don't they land and talk to our leaders? You know what? If they wanted to, they'd do it right now.
Who says they already didn't?
Yeah, that's true.
Well, exactly. But, you know, people say, well, why don't they just land in a public place and admit they're here and talk to all the world leaders? And, yeah, why not? Clearly they don't want to. And there's nothing we can do about it.
They dictate the terms.
If we could get them to do that, do you think somebody would have done that by now? There are so many people who want that to happen. I you know, if we had any kind of control, it would have happened.
I don't think
anything's going to happen that they don't want.
No, they're dictating the terms. I think in the past it was a scenario of, I'm saying centuries back, that this was a known, this was known, it was obvious. The gods of old, I believe, are the extraterrestrials of today. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think what had happened through for one reason or another, was to take a position of a back seat, but being involved through either legacies of their own kin here, but that are more human-like, be it the I don't know, Anunnakis and relatives or whoever, cousins, kins, the blue bloods, whatever. But one thing I was going to say, you know, as far as them showing up, you know, you had Michael Horn on one of your shows, and
yep.
The Billy Maher case, you talk about being obvious and photographed and everything. Where do you stand on this? So many people say it was just a hoax, this is just malarkey, and I, you know, tell you the truth, I believe these were all analog photographs, so I'm not an expert on that. If it was digital, I could have probably made some deductions, but where do you think that case stands? Is it legitimate? Is some of it legitimate? What do you think?
I think that, yeah, probably the safest answer is yes, some of it is legitimate. Maybe not every single picture. But I have to say, you know, I avoided this for a really long time because of all the controversy. I thought, how am I supposed to know? You know, photographic experts should be deciding this. But before I had Michael Horn on the show, I did some research. I read some of the books. And Billy Maher had one arm. He lost an arm in a bus accident when he was a young man. He took these pictures with one hand, with a very old-fashioned camera, which he bought specifically because he could operate it with one hand. And there was an interview in one of the books from the guy at the camera store who sold it to him, and he said, this man spent hours walking around my store looking at all the different cameras, and he picked this little old thing that I didn't think I'd ever get rid of because he could use it with one hand. Okay, fine. I look at the pictures, and my first thought is these can't possibly be real. They're too perfect. You know, they're too clear. They're too sharp. They're too detailed. But when you read the books and the accounts of people like Wendell Stevens, who went over there to Switzerland and stayed in Billy Maher's home. And Billy said, yeah, come on in. You know, he didn't say, don't go in down that hallway or don't look in this room. You know, he opened up his tiny home to everybody and said, yeah, walk around wherever you want, look at whatever you want. Later on, I'll take you out and I'll show you where I took those pictures. And these people would bring the photos out with them and they would compare them. They'd find exactly the spot where Billy had stood when he took the photos of UFOs. They couldn't find anything that he could have suspended a model from. In one case, the UFO would have been out over a cliff. There was absolutely no way that a guy with one arm could have done this. Maybe if he had made a model and thrown it up in the air, maybe. But in that case, he would have had to take several pictures at a time to get one good one. So they went into town and they talked with the guy who processes the film for Billy, and they looked at his negatives, and he didn't have a whole series of bad shots with one good one picked out. He had all the shots they showed him. I mean, everything that Billy, every print that he said he had, they found the negatives.
That's interesting.
So, and they talked to the guy who processed the film, and he said, yeah, he's been coming in for years. He never asked me to do anything special with his film. I just process it and give it back to him just like everybody else.
Shirley
McClain. Where do you go with that?
Yeah.
They have to
That's very interesting.
How can that be faked?
Yeah. Shirley MacLaine spent time with him,
too. I don't
understand
how it could be real, but I can't see how it could be faked either.
Right.
Now, there have been a lot of questions, I know, like, there were photos of pictures that looked very much like almost identical to pictures in children's books. When he started claiming he was doing time travel, that I have a problem with, because people have identified children's books that look like the same picture that showed up in his photographs. And where he photographed this beautiful female alien, and then people have found TV footage of an actress who looks exactly like her. And in fact, the image from the TV footage is like the same angle. Her hair is done the same way. She has the same expression on her face. It's like he lifted that image.
Well, that's a little fishy that
Not just an actress who looks like that woman. It's like this is the picture that he used. I don't know what to make of that. Hmm. You know, Billy says some of the pictures that he took are missing. Other people came in and put pictures in there that he didn't take, which sounds implausible, except in this field, this kind of thing does happen. I don't know.
Hmm. Could be trying to discredit
him. People very commonly like to say that I am really gullible, because I just keep saying I'm not convinced either way. I don't know. You know, if somebody... Billy was always very open with his pictures. He didn't count them before he gave them to someone to look at and then count them again when he got them back. He'd hand them a shoebox and say, here, you know, look through them. And people would steal his photos all the time, and they'd steal the negatives. He lost a ton of stuff this way because he was so open and honest and trusting, and it didn't occur to him that people would steal from him. His pictures are, in a way, they're not a good record anymore because he didn't keep track of these things.
Yeah, they're compromised because of the chain of command. And
exactly.
Yes. The other
thing, he was being so honest and making them open and available to everybody, and... You know, people took advantage of him, I think.
And they
did contaminate his evidence, and now it's very difficult to say what the truth is in that case. But I honestly, deep down, I believe that he's legitimate, because I just don't see how he could have faked some of these things. And to me, after I read the book and I found out how much his wife hated having all these researchers and all these visitors to their home, she could not stand that. Why would she not have said, it's a fake, he made it, here's the model? If it was fake, all she had to do was say, here it is, here's how he did it. And it all would have died down. But she put up with that for years, even though she detested it. And she never said a word to anybody about how he faked it. Now, I'm sorry, I'm a wife of a UFO researcher. If I had that kind of thing going on, and I felt the way that she is reported to have felt about having all these people in her house all the time, that would be the first thing I do. Like,
right.
You know what? It's not real. Here, now go home.
Richard, better look out.
But I don't understand why, you know, Billy Meyer's wife never did that. She would have loved to have an excuse to get all those people out of her house.
Hmm. Now, so, on the scope of, let's say, for instance, what's on the horizon, what do you think, where do you think we're going to be? Let's say, for instance, a year from now, 10 years from now, what do you think?
2012?
2012, yeah, that's right.
We're going to be hanging on to the earth's crust, hoping it doesn't slip too far.
I know Richard says he doesn't believe in 2012. We were talking about that, but I said everyone's going to die on the planet but Richard and his little wagon in the driveway.
Rich is hoping to have his book out, you know, by November of 2012, so we'll all get to buy it and read it before.
Before we die.
Yeah.
Now,
everybody's last book.
Do you give much credence to 2012?
I'm sorry?
Do you give much credence to the 2012 phenomena, or whatever you want to call it, the whatever? It's taken off in so many directions.
You know what? I kind of can't.
Yeah.
Because I would get really depressed.
Yeah, John no, wants to get...
it's scary. I don't want to think that's real. And so I tell myself, well, there was the year 2000 thing, and Nostradamus said the world was going to end in 1999, and it didn't.
No.
It didn't end in Y2K. And so I just have to tell myself that 2012, yeah, maybe something big will happen, mm-hmm. but I have to have faith that it's going to be something good, because otherwise, I'm a weak person in that way. I have to believe that it's going to be okay, or else I would have a really hard time functioning.
I think, if anything, it's a consciousness. It's maybe an awareness. I know we're having tons of calamities because I pay attention to that crazy stuff all the time.
Yeah, it's not, we've only had trillions of animals dying. Storms and everything are really scaring the heck out of me, I have to say.
Yeah, yes. Earthquakes, storms, and whatever.
The newest one I just heard was, what was the octopus?
The octopus.
2,000 or so.
Yeah.
Octopus just died.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we are like... I don't think we're going to get to see 2012 to die. we're not going to make it to 2012.
John has a lot of optimism, though he does want to come out with 2012 Christmas cards.
He's, yeah, I got this, a whole line. I got a whole series of 2012 Christmas cards.
Oh, gosh. Because we'll all have just made it.
No, we all celebrate on the 20th that year is what it is.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. Now,
it'll be like millennium parties. We'll have, you know, new age parties.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah. Now, your own paranormal or UFO experiences, my friend, I don't think you've ever divulged any to me.
I've had just little ones. Mostly I read about things that happen to other people. I collect other people's stories.
Safer that way.
I had, you know what? I will tell you, I had a really, really strange experience. It was brief. It was a few seconds long, but it was bizarre, and it freaks out everybody I tell about it. Just one night, I was getting ready for bed, and I walked into the bathroom to brush my teeth. And when you walk in our bathroom, the sink and the mirror are to your left. So you walk in, and then you turn to your left to face the mirror. As I turned to face the mirror, I saw my face in profile.
What?
Looking down. And I thought, what? Wait a minute, what? And I turned around to look behind me. I don't know what I was thinking was going to be behind me. Maybe something like a towel hanging on a rack that would look like my face somehow. I don't know. And I looked back, and there was my face looking straight at it.
Whoa.
So, you know, for like a couple of seconds, I was facing the mirror but not seeing. I was seeing something from a couple seconds earlier. If that makes any sense. And since I've told one or two people that story, I've heard that happens a lot, apparently.
Yeah, I think time is a funny thing, and at this stage of whatever's going on, time may be more malleable, and we may be getting some personal accounts of bizarre experiences with time. It's not understood, and these accounts do happen.
Sort of something we all made up, you know. It's also we can agree to be in the same place at the same time, but it's like we made up clocks and we agreed how to read them, but time isn't a separate thing that we measure, really.
No. And it's a man-made phenomena for the most part. I mean, we created time, we created calendars and all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it just happens, and it's different every place else.
Time seems to be different certain times. If you're in a real hurry, something's exciting,
yes,
time goes faster or goes slower.
Yeah.
It's very,
it really depends on perception
It is. It's one of those things that you nail it right on that. Perception affects it. Again, thought, you know, as far as thought, you know, energy follows thought, then that has to create or has to have an effect on matter and then, of course, on consciousness. It's very interesting. Who was your most frightening guest on your radio show?
When Sam Maranto.
No. We always have a good time.
Is this my most what guest?
Frightening. What was the most frightening paradigm that came out of an interview that you walked away saying, oh my gosh, I never thought of that? And it just left you with a very frightening, queasy feeling.
Well, you know, I have to say, in almost every way, my most memorable guest has been Lloyd Pye talking about the Star Child skull.
Yes, that would make sense. And for those people that don't know what it is, maybe you could get into this a little bit.
Yeah. Lloyd Pye has been a hominid researcher for many years. He was essentially a Bigfoot expert. But he understands about the differences in skeletons of different stages of man, and which is why he was chosen to be consulted about these skulls. I talk about the Star Child skull. That's one of them. It was found along with a human skull in a cave in Mexico around the turn of the 20th century.
I think it was a hybrid.
Well, it's really bizarre. And the most interesting thing I find about it is the two skulls were tested. The human skull is totally normal. They carbon dated it. It goes back to a particular time, which I'm sorry, I can't recall at the moment. I want to say it's like 800 years ago. They looked at it under a microscope. It's got normal bone cells. It appears to be of a racial type that was common in that area at that time. So, you know, that one you might say totally fits with what you would expect to find there. The other skull, it was very difficult to cut a sample off because it was really, really hard, even though old bone is normally very brittle. And what you have to be more careful with usually is not shattering the entire bone when you cut a small piece off. This one, they used the normal tools and they could hardly cut into it at all. They eventually managed to cut a small piece out, and when they looked under a microscope, they did find normal bone cells, but a lot of them, many, many, many more than is normal. And there was also a network of fibers running through them, which made them incredibly strong, and which explains why they had such a hard time cutting the thing. Because it was so strong, the thickness of the skull is different. It's much thinner than usual, and that means the brain case is much larger. The head itself is larger. There are no sinuses. It's almost as if the whole inside of the skull is all brain. It's, you know, way more than what we have.
Yes.
The bizarre thing is people try to say, well, it's a fake skull, you know, it's rubber, it's not real. Well, no, it's real. It's got cells. It grew. You know, how do you grow a fake skull?
No, this is a genuine article you could touch, see it exists, and they and the doctors and medical people looking at examiner scientists trying to brush it away as some sort of fluke of a genetic goof up, some sort of encephalitis head or cranium, and it's not. Mm-hmm. There is no. It doesn't look like that at all.
It's perfectly shaped.
Yeah, I mean, it's uniform, it's symmetric as far as, doesn't have any maladies as far as that would go. Not at all. Now, the other thing you'd mentioned, there are advancements that he's made with the DNA. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, Lloyd has had the DNA tested a couple of times, and they found the mitochondrial DNA, which, as I understand it, is what comes from the mother.
Correct.
Comes from the mother's side. And that, again, is it fits with human racial type, common to that area, that period. Everything fits beautifully. The other DNA, which should come from the father, didn't come up with any matches when they ran it against our entire database in the National Institute of Health. He's done more testing against a wider database. First, he did, you know, initial testing against the most common samples and didn't find anything. Then he, after a couple of years, was able to come up with enough money to have more extensive testing. He said he's now run it against samples of absolutely every bit of DNA in the National Institute of Health database, and we have found nothing. Absolutely no match anywhere. This is totally unheard of. It's not a contaminated sample. It's not a bad sample at all. It's a perfectly good sample. It just doesn't match anything that we have on Earth.
Now, you see, this is the problem here, Karen. Yeah.
I'm sorry?
This is the problem. And this is something that I keep on emphasizing. We could state something to be alien because it could be foreign to us, but it doesn't necessarily mean extraterrestrial because we
exactly.
don't have a sample of extraterrestrial.
Right.
And that's where these scientists, these doctors, these DNA experts come to an end and they go, well, where do we go from here? You know, and it's hard for the average person to understand the dilemma they're facing. We don't have samples of extraterrestrial.
Right. Well, if Bill Chalker is, you know, if his case comes through, he wrote The Hair of the Alien.
Yes, from Australia.
It was about someone who apparently was able to collect a hair following an abduction experience.
That was from Australia, wasn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, that was tested, and they found it matched up to several different racial types, which aren't really compatible, as I recall. They were different types that you never find in the same person.
Right, and they recovered that through... the gentleman who got that recovered it through some having a little bit of a good time with an alien, from what I
understand. Apparently. Yeah. I don't know how much he enjoyed it. But.
I don't know. Supposedly it barked. I don't know. But anyways.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I heard about that. He's barking aliens.
Barking aliens.
Dogs, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Something. But how is that coming along? Do you know where they're at on that? I mean...
I haven't heard any new developments in that case. Mm-hmm. I read that book a couple of years ago. And I don't know. I would love to hear if there are new developments there.
I heard about that one from the MacBook.
Now, what do you have in store for your Friday show?
Well, this week I'm going to be talking with Peter Robbins, who's been on my show many times. Usually he and I discuss, you know, what's up in the world of ufology, and we just kind of hang out and chat, because Peter is a good friend of mine and has been for years. But this week, we're actually planning to discuss the Rendlesham Forest case, which occurred 30 years ago. And many people know Peter Robbins was the co-author of one of the most excellent books about that case, Left at East Gate, which he wrote along with witness Larry Warren.
Well, this is getting a lot of attention these days, the Rendlesham case, and rightfully so. I admire the fruitless attempts of yet I don't know how they get it, but they get in the media the so-called skeptics, the things they come up with. How about it? The what is it? It has to be the light from the lighthouse, you know, the reflection there.
Oh, you know, it doesn't seem like you have to be more gullible to believe the prosaic explanation than
you
to
would.
Believe that they actually are aliens?
Yes. I mean, it just makes sense.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Karen. We're going to be talking to your other half in a little while later on in the show today. Everybody stay tuned. You're listening to Beyond the Thresholds into Other Realms on theedgeonair.com and ufo-info.com. We'll be right back.
What can the Illinois Center for Broadcasting do for you? Hands-on training? Check. Instructors who actually work in radio or TV? Check. Job placement assistance? Check. Financial aid? Check. Success in the broadcasting industry? Well, that's up to you. Go to beyondair.com and schedule an interview and a campus tour. It only takes a few minutes to jumpstart your future, so go now. That's beyondair.com, or you can call 630-916-1700 for more information. The Illinois Center for Broadcasting, where broadcasting careers begin.
Unsigned musicians, this is your chance to be a part of something bigger, something real. How about
radio airplay?
TheEdgeOnAir.com, underground internet radio. Just go to TheEdgeOnAir.com and click submit music.
It's just a click, you're there.
Follow the 1-2-3 instructions and submit your MP3. Cut out all the swearing and make sure it doesn't sound like crap. Join an underground revolution today. That's TheEdgeOnAir.com, playing the greatest music you've never heard.
TheEdgeOnAir.com and Thresholds Into Other Realms present Thresholds Radio, a weekly show dedicated to all things paranormal. Join your hosts Sam Maranto, John Stevenson, and Anthony Kopp Fridays from 10 to 11 p.m. for an expedition beyond your most unexplainable dreams. With new guests every week, Thresholds Radio will bend your views on reality. That's Friday nights 10 to 11 on TheEdgeOnAir.com. For more info on Thresholds Radio, visit UFO-info.com.
You're listening to Beyond the Thresholds Into Other Realms on UFO-info.com. With me is Sam Maranto and John Stevenson, and I am Anthony Kay. Right now we have one of our favorite regulars, Richard Dolan. What's up, buddy? How you doing?
Hey, very happy to be on here. This is like my home away from home, so thanks a lot for having me on again.
Yeah, I feel bad. We just actually we were talking to Richard a couple seconds ago,
and Anthony erased him.
Yeah, so we got to do this all over again. So it's my fault. But You know, we were talking about a little bit about disclosure and how we just hope it's coming soon. And it is we're halfway through 2011 and still no disclosure. And do you think it'll ever happen soon? I mean,
Look, I don't think that we're going to have a disclosure in the immediate future. I've not thought that at all. Even though I wrote a book about it, that doesn't mean that I think it's going to happen this year. Mm-hmm. I wrote After Disclosure with Bryce Zabel, and we do believe it's going to happen.
In our lifetime, right?
But the thing is, I mean, look, we're talking a historical trend here. Mm-hmm. You know, the world is rapidly changing, and but that doesn't mean that a disclosure, like by the president or some other important individual, is going to come anytime soon. It'll only happen, I've been saying this all along, when they're forced, when something is so obvious. And I don't think we're there yet. I've always felt that the two biggest candidates for pushing a disclosure would be new technologies that are available to the people themselves so that allow us to capture and communicate our sightings better. And then the other thing would be something like a WikiLeaks type of leak. And I think that we're getting close to both of those historically, but I try to take the big picture here. And by that, 5 years, 10 years would not shock me if it's 10 years from now. It wouldn't shock me if it's as much as 15, 20 years.
But do you think it will be in our lifetime?
But it could happen.
I think it's going to be the aliens that do the disclosure finally. I don't think we ever will.
I think it's going to be obvious for us. In other words, it'll be a known fact. They'll be intermarrying with our families.
And well, I don't know.
It'll be sure, why not? They might. That may be the scenario. First of all, to begin with, that we are a part of a much greater species out there. But the thing is, you know, much like the with Galileo here it took what 300 some years before they they said, well, you know, he may have had something with this Copernicus theory, so therefore we're gonna say he's all right. And that took 300 some years. My God. So I think we'll know about it. Yeah, I think we'll just take it as fact. It'll be part of our,
What I just mean is I don't think the governments are ever going to do it. I think aliens will end up doing it first.
Well, it looks that way. I mean, here we've had so much activity. Now, again, your take on the Jerusalem footage, I don't know if you've examined it much, but...
Well, I've looked at the four videos that I know are available. Mm-hmm. I haven't looked at them in the last week or two. I'm kind of putting those on hold for right now, and the reason is simply that I don't feel that my time is valuable. It's not valuable for me to do this in lieu of the fact that there are no witnesses that I know who have come forward.
Actually, they have. The one videographer came forward.
Has he?
Yeah, one of the persons.
So do we know
we
know his name?
Did a video of himself,
yes.
He said, right?
He came forward and he came forward, gave a complete presentation as far as why he did it, what he did, and where he was. The other thing is now there is a security camera tape, and of course the security camera tape would have absolutely no interest in recording anything, or, you know, there's nobody there. It's just running.
It collaborates the other
stuff.
So
what are you saying? Did the security camera tape capture a UFO? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it does. So
So we're saying that's a fifth video?
Yeah, and that's security tape,
and
which
security tape
is taken by
no,
itself.
It's biased. Don't care. It just takes pictures. So we
I haven't seen that. I admit that I sort of let the case go on hold because... I was waiting for someone to come forward, and I just didn't think that was going to happen. The guy who runs All News Web, Michael Cohen, said that he spoke to someone, but that didn't really count much for me because this person's identity wasn't known, and I didn't really know if it was a true statement.
Right.
So, but you're saying someone has come forward.
Yes, Jaime.
And you're also
presented...
saying that a fifth video,
yes,
a security camera video, has recorded this.
Yes,
Well, that's important.
Very
important.
I think
the surveillance video is more important than anything, actually, because those can't be edited and they don't lie.
Right. Now, this was presented at the Nation of Islam's presentation, you know, a couple weeks back here, 2 weeks back or so. And Jaime Massad brought it up there, showed it, and that's pretty darn impressive. The other thing that I like is on the fourth video, Rich, I think you'll get a kick out of this, the slowed down versions and excerpts give a lot of detail. And we had, last week I was speaking up in Huntley, Illinois, I had a gentleman who lived in Jerusalem, not far from the Dome of the Rock. He lived there for 18 years. His brother is a consulate. He works at the consulate, American consulate. And he told me exactly where these people were and the angles, the perspective. And he himself saw two UFOs in Jerusalem, one over the Dome of the Rock, and it shot up exactly like this did, but it was in broad daylight. So he says...
Actually, I'm looking at this this witness. His name is Eligael Gedeleyevich, something
that's
like that.
That's the gentleman, yes.
Probably botching his name.
Better noted on.
Actually, yeah. Well, you know what? He made this statement around the time that I was flying to Phoenix, and obviously it just...
Yeah, you wouldn't have known about it.
He planned it that way.
But seriously, this is interesting, I must say. So,
it's kind of interesting. What I find interesting, and I'll cover this next week, another aspect of it is what's up in the sky. What's up in
I'm
the
reading s- comments. Hold on. Just hear some comments about this guy's. Someone writes, this video has been nailed as a hoax beyond any reasonable doubt. I don't know what he and his mates have in mind for an encore. My prediction, it will also fail close scrutiny. The thing is, I can't wrap my head around why invest more time in this hoax. Something's rubbing me the wrong way about this whole thing. It's a hoax, yes, but to what end? Well, this is an interesting thing. Is it hoax, or is it?
I don't think it is.
Legit?
Well, if that's security camera, I haven't seen that
not
footage myself.
Well, no,
let's
no.
find the.
But rarely do they ever. Camera. Rarely do they do it. And the other thing is, two people came out, of course, knocking this right off the bat was Schaefer and Radford. So, right off the bat, when they go after it, and right there, you almost wonder if it was that much of a hoax, they wouldn't even waste their time with it. I don't know. But
I'm at a page where it's a YouTube clip with Jaime Musson talking about the security camera. This is very, very interesting indeed.
Has that data been released, security camera footage yet? Or?
Yeah, it was shown.
Well, this is video from March 4th. I'm looking at it right now. Okay. But this is like this is a long, long clip.
Yeah.
Here, I don't know. We'll have to go through all of this. Well, I guess what I would say, gentlemen, is good job in keeping me on my toes.
Yeah, how we try.
You know, if it is...
I mean, the thing is, I can never pretend that I'm on top of every single case. The only way I can reasonably hope is that there's all kinds of people pushing me and prodding me in different directions, and eventually I'll get it. I tend to be slow when it comes to current cases. I have to be slow because there's just so much that a person can get really nailed on if it's wrong.
That's the way to go, slow and surely.
Absolutely.
As a historian, I have a benefit when I look at a case that's 20 or 30 or 40 years old. It's not so controversial, and I can have some kind of detachment and look at it. The new cases, I can be as wrong as the next guy.
Right. Well, if the Jerusalem video is real, if it is really real, and it does come out to say it's real, it is a really weird thing it's doing. It's just hovering over a building.
Not just any building.
And it was shot at, though. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was shot
over,
at.
Yeah, and it just took off, you know, like a bullet. And it almost, it did look like maybe like an abduction type of
thing. Well, that was an ordnance. It was a flash. It looks like it was shot at and then shot straight up.
Well, it was hovering over a building. Like maybe it was trying to take something out of the building, or maybe it was trying to just...
Well, that's speculative. I mean, you could never tell what it was doing.
Well, that's my...
Abduct someone out of the Dome of the Rock,
yeah.
That's my opinion.
Well, someone's going to come forward that their uncle Jaime's missing.
Right. But, no, it did look like it was trying to do something. It looked like it had some sort of agenda. You know, it wasn't just... It just floated down, hovered there for about a minute, and then shot off.
If it was real, it's just kind of an interesting case.
It was a sightseer. They were just
Well, you have to understand all the things. This is the Dome of the Rock. Now, historically, before Islam, you know, before being a holy site for Islam, it was a holy site for the Jews, for the Christians, and even before that, modern
site of the Second Temple of Jerusalem.
But it's also important. These sites are always built on historical, revered locations that they feel there's an energy, that there's something associated with portals or on and on and on. That's why most of these chapels are built where they're located. There's a prior history well before the established religion took place. So there's a reason why it's there. The other thing is the objects that were up, the red illuminations in the sky. I had a case here in Illinois in Tinley Park, actually had two, where I have a drawing of a similar configuration of these red illuminations spinning around. And the week after, or 2 weeks after this event, because that was the 28th, I think it was the 18th of February, we had a woman and her husband seeing a hexagon configuration in the sky with reddish or orange lights. And in the middle of it was this massive, an extremely brilliant light, but it was opaque. And but she had mentioned that it was surrounded by what appeared to be a hexagon or some, you know, geometric figure or pattern with the red lights at each point connecting the two lines, if there were lines there. And that would be exactly what you would be looking at here if, in the center of it, it were illuminated. So, coincidence, correlation, the odds of all these things adding up to be a hoax, it just don't cut it. It just doesn't cut it.
I never felt comfortable with the hoax concept for one reason, which is simply that you've got all of these different videos coming up at the same time from different angles.
Yeah.
It's a quite involved hoax, wouldn't it be? So
yes.
I agree with you that, and in fact, I've never stated that I believed these were definitely a hoax. What I've just felt was that for investigative purposes, until someone came forward, I never knew what to do with this case. So if we got someone coming forward, and now we've got this additional security video, yeah, I think it's back on the table. We should be.
It should be looked at. And I haven't had a time.
Someone else
to...
should write about it and try
right.
to. I mean, Jaime's writing about it. He's talking about it, and that's a start. And let's see some.
We have some people out there looking at it for us, and we're getting some information back through this gentleman we have working with us. And his insight was huge because he was able to describe exactly where these people are standing. And yes, this is correct. And he's describing what goes on. For instance, people are saying, well, there's no traffic. Well, it just so happens in that area, there isn't traffic, especially at that time of the night. There's little or no traffic whatsoever. It is a highly secured area. And the other thing is, it appears to be ordnance exploding at the side of it.
It did look like it to me as well, yeah. Mm-hmm. It looked like that flash. In fact, I mentioned to you guys on another show that we had when we discussed this, but I showed this to my daughter.
Yes.
Sharp 12-year-old young lady, and that was her immediate assumption as well. She said it looked like someone was shooting at it.
Yep.
That's what the flash was.
That's how us friendly people on Earth are. Welcome to our
Earth
planet.
Yeah.
We'll blast you.
Now, to make matters even far more bizarre, there's rumor about that a baby was found inside the mosque itself.
I've never heard that one.
Yes. And that's the new rumor, that there was a baby found there in the mosque. Abandoned baby. I really don't know the details.
Brought there by the aliens.
Who knows? You know, or maybe it summoned it. It walked there and summoned it.
I haven't heard any anything about this, I think, other than from you, Sam. So,
yeah, Kevin brought it up to me when we did the interview. Yes, Kevin Smith brought it up, and I read it on a couple blogs. I don't know if I read it in a news article or not, so who knows? Okay. But that would be the least of my concerns of anything legitimate to this or added to it. But now
all of this is making me really wonder how the heck, because I'm writing a history of UFO phenomenon over the last 20 years. I've done two volumes dealing with the true past, and now I'm doing a volume that deals with the last 20 years coming into the present. And it's going to be very difficult, I can see this, to deal with, say, the last 5 years in particular, sorting through and trying to decide what's worth putting in and what is not yet worth putting in. I have to honestly say, I don't know what the answer to some of these questions is going to be until I come up to it. I'll have to make my decision. But, for example, the Jerusalem case, I may have something to say about it when I end up putting this into a book, or I may not. But if I do, I still have to decide what to say. And there's just so many cases like this. I just was shown a case, a video from Devon, England, from less than 1 week ago. Interesting video, shot by a man in a field with a dog, and behind some trees is what looks like a classic flying saucer, the way Bob Lazar described the sports car, sort of like the Billy Meyer type of UFO. And this is moving behind some trees, and it's very real looking. I understand that the guy shooting the video is 70 years old. That doesn't mean he couldn't do some Photoshop, but you gotta wonder. I've just tried to contact him, so I'm hoping that he'll write back to me. If he's a legitimate person, well, I have to wonder. Maybe he got something that's real. Is it a fake? And that's another question. And there are just so many interesting-looking videos that are out there, and I do think some are real. I don't think they're all fake.
Well, chances are a lot of them are real, and everyone debunks so fast we don't even realize
them. Well, here's the weird thing. Because it can be fake, therefore it must be fake. That's the so-called skeptic mentality, which I say is the equation of a moron. What happens is if you know, it would be the same mentality as if a glass can be broken, therefore it must be broken, therefore it cannot hold water. The same thing they use is a human is fallible, therefore it is flawed. Anything, you know, we observe because we could be deceived, we must be deceived. And that mentality is really moronic.
That's what the debunkers want, though. They want to make it to where you won't believe anything.
Well, it's not a matter of belief. We don't ask for belief. We want people to consider.
Well, I mean, you can see something that's amazing, but yet now you're not going to think anything about it. Where
sure,
but before the evidence, they do this, you might.
But
have
we have evidence to bring forth. You know, again,
the key to all good debunkery and all good. The key to all good debunking is not necessarily to fully to disprove a case. See, that's not necessary. And what we're seeing is that as long as you sow the seed of doubt into people, that's enough to disable the case.
Yes.
And it's not just with UFOs. It's with everything.
Oh, right. Of course.
It's with CIA drug dealing allegations. Mm-hmm. You sow the seed of doubt and you get a standard he said, she said type of debate in the media, and then it just dies out.
Yep, and that's all you need.
So, and it's the same with UFOs. It's the same with 9/11. It's the same with any major event, Kennedy assassination, obviously. People will have their own opinions, but if there's a little bit of doubt that they can make you believe about your position, that's enough. They've discovered that is enough.
Well, speaking
of... You don't have to disprove it scientifically.
Speaking of 9/11, and we're going to have, by the way... Richard Gage on April 1st. He's going to be here doing an interview for the show on the
Richard
on the
Gage,
3rd.
Is he? He's from UK. He's got a TV show up there. Is this the same one?
This is the gentleman. He's the gentleman who is the main architect or spokesman for Architects and Engineer for 9/11 Truth.
Sorry, okay, different individual.
That date, what I'd like to do is also have you on, and we'll hook up the UVO system so we could all talk.
Yeah, I would love to.
Yeah, and there's going to be a, he's going to be in town, there's going to be a We Are Change conference where he's going to be speaking at in, I believe, Evanston, Illinois, and that will be on the 3rd. So I think we're going to actually go down there and see it.
3rd of April?
Of April. So the 1st.
I'll be across the ocean at that point.
Oh, you're going to be in Leeds, aren't you?
No, I'm going to be in Amsterdam.
Oh, that's right.
On April 3rd.
And tell us about that.
I don't think I can do it.
What's going on in Amsterdam?
There's a conference. I'll be there. Richard Hoagland will be there. Peter Lavenda will be there. One other really cool guy is going to be there. And we're talking about secret space program and breakaway civilizations for a single day in the Netherlands. And so I'll be there.
You know, Richard, that's a fun little
looking forward
town.
To it.
That's a fun little town.
Amsterdam.
I have it linked from my site. If someone listening wants to check it out, go to keyholepublishing.com. That's my website. And then just click the link, click my picture, which takes you to my page. And on that are a list of my upcoming appearances. I have a lot coming up in the next few months. And one of them is the Amsterdam one. You can just click it.
And next week we have...
Keyholepublishing.com.
Next week, we're going to be in Lawrence at the...
That's next week? Dear
next
Lord.
Next week, yeah.
God almighty. Okay. Lawrence,
yeah.
Kansas.
So how's your pool game? You and Bryce getting... how'd you like that?
I can play pool. Bryce, I think, is a good pool player.
Good.
He's got a pool table.
Oh, my gosh. He's going to stomp us.
Dude's got a pool table. I don't know how often he plays it, but I've seen it.
Oh, gosh.
As for myself... Hey, you know, I can play a game.
Golf, on the other hand, I could do very well at the putt-putt, by the way. That's about it.
Yeah, now, Sam, why don't we really tell people here, a couple of years ago, you were going to have me do a golf... what the hell were we going to do, like a golf PR thing?
Yeah, we were doing the...
what was this?
We had the conference up in Galena, so I had you in, and we were going to do some PR, and you were going to be the official ufological golfer, considering the fact that I can't golf anymore, so I figured you'd give it a whack.
Forget the fact that I totally suck at golf. But hell, I try it.
Yeah, what the heck?
Baseball, I can swing a baseball bat, so you think, but it's a totally different experience. I will tell you that before we nixed that whole idea, I actually borrowed, I found a friend of mine who plays golf, and I said, listen, can you, Jess, please teach me the basics of this, because I don't want to embarrass myself completely out there. So he took me out to this golf, and we did some driving practice, and by driving, of course, I mean like hitting the damn ball and seeing how well you could do. And I will say that after a little bit of practice, my driving was very good. He said, he was a big tough guy too, he's excellent driver. He said, you've got really excellent potential, you've got a very good swing, and you can do it. But here is the problem. All right, driving is one thing. When you're like in this very nice situation, you go out and play a few holes of golf. I'm telling you, man, I was so bad. I was so terrible because I'm out there and the terrain is bumped. It's, you know, it's not level.
No, it's not level.
There's trees and stuff out there.
There's water.
Water.
What's with that sand? Come on.
I'm like, people, don't you clean up your damn golf course here? Got all over the place.
Yeah, I'm not much of a golfer either.
You have to beat that out, I guess.
Oh, that would reverse it.
And of course, that's the way it's supposed to be. And I discovered how bad I was at golf.
I like it. I used to golf, and I would get about maybe halfway through and just get flustered and just drive the cart and say, "You guys play. I'm a perfectionist. If I can't do good, if I'm, you know, over par, it's like, no, can't do it. I'll
become
upset."
Well, golf is a game that I could get into. you know, I enjoyed being out there, truthfully. It's just a situation where it really takes time to get the physical mechanics down right.
You've got
enough time to do it. And I feel that if I really were motivated, if I wanted to do this, I'd go out a couple of times a week. I could probably get my golf game up. But right now,
no way. Well, you've been doing a lot of speaking this year. I'm really impressed. And how are you finding the attendance to be?
Generally, I would say pretty good. I am doing a lot. It's starting up again a lot, like now. It's always this way. In other words, there's a lot in the spring. Late spring, early summer is dicey. Sometimes I don't have much going on. Summer is usually busy. Fall is usually very busy, going right into, in this case, last year, I was right into mid-December. I had a lot of speaking engagements. And then when you get to the holiday season, it slows down, obviously. In January, usually for me, there's nothing. My first major appearance, other than local things, this year was just a week and a half ago in Phoenix for the UFO Congress there. That was extremely well attended. I would say probably close to 1,000 attendees. To get the exact numbers, I would say we could write to the people running it, and I'm sure they'd tell us, but at least 800, probably more. That was a very well attended and active and engaging conference. I enjoyed it.
I think we're going to do well over this other one. I hope we're going to do well at this other one. We are going to have Fox News there, and they're going to give us some media coverage.
Well, that's good. I think that'll be helpful. I'm hopeful that the Oz UFO conference, this is in Lawrence, Kansas. It is, yes, next week. Wow. We'll do well. I think it should do well. There's some very good people that are going to be there. The organizer, Dan Lowing, has been working very hard to promote it. And Lawrence, Kansas is a cool place. There's a lot going on there. The location may be very, very good. It's the central U.S. It's not like L.A. It's not New York. It's wherever you are in the United States, you can probably get yourself to Lawrence, Kansas within a reasonable amount of time and money. So I think there's a lot going for it, and we'll just see. I'm looking forward to it. After that, I've got something a week later in Bordentown, New Jersey. I was just asked to do that. That's run by the inimitable, tireless Pat Marcatilio, otherwise known as Dr. UFO. That's his license plate. Dr. UFO. A few days after that, about a week after that, I'll be at the Secret Space Program and Breakaway Civilization Conference in Amsterdam. That's April 3rd. Then, less than a week after that, I've come back to I'm back in the U.S., and I'll be in Eureka Springs, Arkansas for the Ozark Conference. That's April 10th to the 8th to the 10th. It's crazy. I've got a video interview with a group that's doing a TV shoot. I'll be in New York City for that, and it's nuts.
So tell us what's been going on with Bud Hopkins. It's I'm getting emails and hearing things, but I don't know the scoop. What's going on?
Well, it's sad in a way. What's happening is Bud, who's about 80, I think he may have turned 80. Is gravely ill.
He's
about 80. If he isn't, then he's going to be soon. He just recently wrote publicly that he has two terminal illnesses that he's dealing with, so it's not good.
Man.
Now, I do know I have a friend who just met with Bud the other day who said that he was very active and looking good and apparently feeling good, but the fact is he's got these illnesses, and it's not a good situation.
And of course he's the author of Intruders and a few other books.
He's one of my favorite authors.
I've been lucky. I've gotten to meet with Bud a number of times, and really like him very much. Everyone likes Bud when you meet him. He's an extremely gracious and intelligent, insightful person. He's a fabulous writer as well, and he's serious about what he does. But the thing is, in the last few months he has been under a very significant attack publicly by his ex-wife, Carol Rainey, who wrote a piece for the Paratopia crew. That's basically Jeremy Vaney. And her article is called The Priests of High Strangeness. co-creation of the alien abduction phenomenon. And what she really argues is that Bud Hopkins and Dave Jacobs, really the two most prominent abduction researchers in the country, have been guilty of gross negligence, gross misrepresentation of their data, of sort of leading witnesses and making them believe that they've been abducted by aliens when in fact they haven't. It's really heavy stuff. I mean, coming from a guy's ex-wife, it's very, very damning. So this got a lot of play a few months ago. And what has just been released within the last week or so is a very, very spirited defense of Bud by a gentleman named Sean Meers, M-E-E-R-S. And you can the PDFs of both of these articles, you can just find them and download them. He calls it the article Free for All, The Assassination of Bud Hopkins and Linda Cortile. And Linda Cortile, of course, is the person who's best known for her the Lower Manhattan abduction in 1989, where she, it is said, she was lifted out of a sixth-floor building in Lower Manhattan and in full was, view of a number of witnesses and brought into a craft.
Very famous
accompanied
case, very
by
famous
small alien beings. It's fascinating. Officials. Anyway, long and short of it is that Sean Meers goes through and really picks apart, meticulously, I should say, picks apart Carol Rainey's argument. One thing that I definitely noticed when I read Carol's piece a number of months ago was just, it hurts me to say this because I've met the woman, is just how mean the article is, how nasty it is. It's one thing to go after someone and attack them and their credibility and their work. Really, so much of what she wrote was just snide, mean-spirited. And the fact that Bud is gravely ill, I guess on one hand, shouldn't matter. I mean, if the guy's culpable, if you did something wrong, then even if you're on your deathbed, I suppose you should be held accountable. But the fact was, this was a mean, spirited article in my own personal view. Directed at a guy who is very, very ill and, you know, one would think not always in the best position to, with the amount of energy to defend himself. But there you have it. So this is out in the UFO field now. You know, having met Bud a number of times, the only thing I can say, a couple of things. One, it's not just that his integrity is very, very high in my opinion and in that of just about everyone else who's met him. But the way that he does the regression, one of the things that Sean Meers did in this article is he really defended Bud from the charge that here's, you know, this guy who's supposedly not qualified to do regression is creating a kind of a fantasy where none exists. No, in fact, what he did is he gathered together a large number of professional hypnotherapists who spoke on Bud's behalf and in fact pointed out for the first, roughly the first decade that Bud was involved in this field at all, he didn't even lead the regression sessions. He had qualified, credentialed hypnotherapists leading the sessions themselves, PhD psychotherapists and so forth. So these charges that Carol levied on Bud, I think many of them, most of them, maybe all of them, seem to me to be missing the mark and just kind of nasty. But that's the big controversy going on this week, or one of the big controversies.
Well,
if I may point out, one of the other controversies in this last week had to do with myself. Not so much a controversy as a buzz, which was created by the fact that I released a 10-minute edited version of a presentation I gave a week and a half ago in Phoenix at the International UFO Congress. And what I did was I took on the argument that was recently published by Colonel John Alexander, PhD, who for many, many years was one of the leading lights of the U.S. defense community's non-lethal weapons program. John Alexander's a lot more than that, of course. He's had a very, very illustrious career, to be honest, in the U.S. Army. He's led the way, whether for positive or negative, I suppose, but he's led the way toward increasing research into psychic phenomena, remote viewing. And, he's had a long-standing interest in UFOs. John recently published a book called UFOs. I've got it right here on my desk. Myths, Realities, I don't know, something else. I wrote a review of it. I can't remember the exact title. Isn't that great? But what he argues is something I can be very exact about. And his argument has been, oh, here's his book. It's right here on my desk. UFOs, Myths, Conspiracies, and Realities, of course. He argues that UFOs are real. He says they are nearly certainly a real phenomenon, and he leaves open that they could well be extraterrestrial. He often leans towards something even more bizarre. He thinks maybe an interdimensional aspect. But the point is, he says that it's real, and there's some other intelligence that seems to be behind it. So that's interesting. But then the third part of his argument is that there's no cover-up, that U.S. government is not investigating this. They are, he says, look, this is just not, when people argue that there's a cover-up, they don't really understand how governments operate. He said this many times, and he wrote in his book, essentially that bureaucracies will only investigate something if they're mandated to do so, and that during the late 80s in particular, into the early 90s, he made an extended, long attempt to find if there was a UFO program with his contacts, people he spoke to. He spoke to many four-star generals, as he's often said, and other prominent people, and never found any evidence that any of these people had any knowledge of the topic at all. And so what he argues is that, based on that, he just doesn't see any reason to believe that there's a program.
Well, if you think about it, it's kind of messed up, because there's just, how can you not think that there's a cover-up? I mean, Roswell is the biggest UFO incident in U.S. history, and all that case surrounds is cover-up, 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 cover-up. All right, well, thank you very much, Richard. We're going to talk to you next week. As always, you're one of our regulars here on the show. If you want to see more or hear more or read more about Richard Dolan, you can go to our website, ufo-info.com, or you can go to Keyhole Publishing and check him out. He is a wonderful author, a wonderful guy, and just an overall great person. We'll be right back.
TheEdgeOnAir.com and Thresholds Into Other Realms present Thresholds Radio, a weekly show dedicated to all things paranormal. Join your hosts Sam Maranto, John Stevenson, and Anthony Kopp Fridays from 10 to 11 p.m. for an expedition beyond your most unexplainable dreams. With new guests every week, Thresholds Radio will bend your views on reality. That's Friday nights 10 to 11 on TheEdgeOnAir.com. For more info on Thresholds Radio, visit UFO-info.com.
Okay, thanks for listening to today's mega show. We'll be back on normal schedule next Sunday at 7:30 at UFO-info.com. Our regular 3-hour show will resume. Also, you can check us out Friday night at 10 o'clock at TheEdgeOnAir.com. That's the other venue that holds us as well, or ParanormalRadio.com as well. So whatever works out best for you. But it all comes back here to UFO-info. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great day. Keep your eyes to the skies.
Wrong! 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 I was born with the wrong sign, in the wrong house, with the wrong insanity. I took the wrong road that led to the wrong tendencies. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
marching to the wrong drum with the wrong scum, missing out the wrong.